Part 13, Chapter 2. Robert the Fox had his old cape thrown over his anti-radiation battle dress. His grizzled hair was singed on one side. His face was composed, but there was a hint of concern. He grabbed Johnny's wrist and gave it a hearty shake of welcome. Johnny looked at the singed hair.
How are casualties?
Late,
said Robert the Fox.
Surprisingly late. They don't want to show themselves to us. It impeded their aim. And it's like fighting in a rainstorm. Look, you're not wearing anti-radiation.
That water is washing radiation away as fast as you fire it in. I have something to do. There's no breathe gas in that drone. I don't need radiation cover.
Johnny, can't that drone wait until the mine sites have been flattened? It will take the drone up to 18 hours to get where it's going overseas. We tracked it on the search equipment of this plane, which is to say we tracked the escort. The drone has wave cancellers.
Johnny opened the plane door. It was all ready. There was bread and meat on the seat. An old woman popped up beside him and handed him a cup of steaming herb tea that smelled suspiciously of whiskey. When he looked at her, questioning her presence in this battle zone, she said,
"They can't eat bullets!"
and laughed a cackling laugh. Robert's hand was detaining him.
We still have radio silence successfully in.
They had agreed to give the remote mine site attack pilots 12 hours of radio silence to let them finish off the outlying areas with total surprise, if possible.
That's more than they need. We can shorten it and they can converge on that drone.
It's headed for Scotland,
said Johnny.
That's its first stop.
I know.
Johnny finished off the hot drink and started to climb into the plane. The detaining hand again.
There's something I've got to tell you.
When Johnny had stopped to listen, he continued.
We may not have hit Cyclo.
I know.
That means that we may need all the planes and equipment we can get here. They're in hangars under us. We don't have men enough to take the place by assault, and we mustn't destroy it.
You can work this out with Glen Cannon. You'll have a pilot in half an hour or so. You can bash it in from the air.
He made to get into the plane, and again, Robert's hand was on his sleeve.
We had a funny thing happen just before sunset. A tank surrendered.
Johnny stepped back onto the ground. He might as well spend this time getting into the warm clothing needed at high altitudes, and he proceeded to do so.
Go on.
Robert took a deep breath, but before he went on, a runner came up to tell him the historian had delivered a new load of ammunition from the academy. Robert told him to see it was passed out. The blast fire needles continued to lash overhead in the now quite dark night.
The tank is a bash our way to glory. It's down there at the other end of the ravine. Oh, don't be alarmed. It's in our hands. It came out of the garage port and came right straight toward us. We hit it with bazookas and they didn't even dent it. But it didn't fire back. It went right straight down to the end of the ravine there and threw out an intercom through an atmosphere lock and said it wanted to talk to the Hawkner leader. It wanted a guarantee of safety in return for cooperation.